Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who, for the most part, are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Hanny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and D. Quiller, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Have you recovered yet, man?
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I hate to draw a bad illusion, but I think we burned Atlanta down.
I think you're right. I think we came close anyway. If we didn't,
we tore it up.
The combination of us and the SEC basketball championship I think it was more than the city could handle. It really was.
Magical.
And not in a good way, though.
Well, it depends.
Yeah, well, depends on who you're rooting for, I guess.
Right, yeah.
And I was rooting for the theater, so...
Hey.
So there you go. Well, we got more SETC stuff on tap here for this week's episode.
Cool.
We got about half of it done, so...
So we're having a part two?
We're having a part two.
A part to do.
So here's what we're going to do today.
Okay.
We're going to listen to the interviews that we recorded at SETC, now 2 weeks ago. Deep Fried Theater is going to be a group called Whip Improv. These guys are pretty cool.
Yeah, there were a bunch of students who started an improv troupe kind of
as a senior project,
and they're going to try to take it to the next level. So that's really cool. I mean, I really support those guys. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and Whip Improv stands for Work in Progress Improv, and we'll link to their website and stuff like that too, but we'll listen to them. Dumb Show University, we got two or three of those.
Okay.
Tim Davis.
Right, our buddy Tim.
Right, from the Bluegrass, what was it, Bluegrass Technical Community, Bluegrass something in Kentucky.
Bluegrass Community and Technical College?
Sounds great.
Awesome.
That sounds great. He'll tell us again.
we'll get hate mail.
Yeah, Tim's going to love us for that one. And then, but it's a mouthful. Darren Michael, Union University, that's just down the road from us. One of my former students from Texas actually was at SETC, which I completely was not expecting, so we sat down and interviewed her, Brenna Yeary. She's graduating soon.
From
I don't remember
from high school or
yeah, from when I taught in high school.
No, but I mean she's now graduating high school.
No, she's graduating college, which means I'm an old.
Yes, you are. You're a crusty gentleman.
I am a crusty gentleman, as it were. Two Shot is going to be Ken Stilson.
All right.
And I don't know if we mentioned it vaguely just in passing about.
The Romeo and Juliet.
The Romeo and Juliet story. Yeah, the guy who was taken downtown for his production of Romeo and Juliet.
I won't say
not a euphemism there either.
Right.
Unfortunately,
it wasn't quite booked, Dano, but pretty close.
Right. Yeah. That's it. That's what we got right here on the list.
The hot list.
The hot list. That's what we got going. So let's, without further ado, let's do it.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them, and they don't all play,
in the gutter, of course. Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some Deep Fried Theater!
John?
Yes, sir.
We're here with Matthew Martinez.
Oh, outstanding.
Who actually we met at one of our workshops.
That's right. Our Harold Longform Improvisation.
We're at SETC. The reason why we wanted to have Matthew come on and talk to us is he is a student. Now, tell us where you're a student.
North Greenville University.
Okay.
It's in South Carolina.
Excellent. Pull that mic a little closer to you there.
Is this close enough?
That's better, yeah.
Excellent.
You kind of be center of the mic.
Yeah,
so.
They're very directional.
I see.
That's better.
There we go.
And you're a student, right?
I am. I'm a senior, yeah, theoretically. I should be graduating this May, but probably not going
to
happen.
Now, so. I want you to tell us a little bit about why we wanted to have you on the podcast. Tell us about your improv group.
Oh, that's why?
We just like you a lot.
And that you attended our workshop.
Okay.
I mean,
we wanted proof. We actually had someone attend a workshop. That's all.
There well, we go. That justifies our expenses for our bosses.
Yeah. Well, as the only member in their workshop, I did learn a lot. I had a lot of 3-on-1 attention. No, actually, they're what, like 50 some odd?
Yeah, there was. Turning themselves away.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Thankfully.
I enjoyed it.
Good. So tell us about your group.
Okay, yeah. My group is called Work in Progress. We are the voice-cracking improv group from North Greenville. And it kind of began as my senior seminar project. I had to do something, and I'm no good at acting or anything else. So I figured I could bluff my way through and do an improv group. And it's turned out really good. We've had a few shows. We've been doing training a lot. I've read all the books, read the Del Close book, the Keith Johnston book, and all of the other flow outs from those two books.
Right,
and,
sure.
You know, obviously Viola, Spolin, and whatnot. And we started with short form. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of the gaming games and the jokey jokes and all that stuff. And it went over well. It got us enough attention so that we could do more of our own shows without anyone else. And we've kind of gone too long form. We've done a few Herald shows, which have gone pretty well for not having any training whatsoever, just reading Truth and Comedy, and that's it.
Right.
So, and obviously now going to be exponentially better due to workshopping.
Testimonial, did you hear that?
You're going to have a great future, Matthew. I'm just going to tell you right now that we're, you know.
Absolutely.
The smoozing factor is really good, so
before
kudos
you forget,
on that.
Before you forget, throw out your website.
All right. Our website, it's older than our group, actually. It's www.wipimprov.com. Whip Improv. Work in Progress Improv.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. A lot of people say we pimprov, and I'm like, no, we're not pimps. But
but you could be. With a little work, you could do that, I bet.
Winkety-wink.
So, anyway, so started as a senior project. How long have you been working on this? How long has it been going?
It hasn't even been a full year yet, and already we've been getting people calling in saying they want us to do a show. We actually have 3 shows coming up in the next week and a half that were asked. Like, we were asked to come out and perform for these guys based on just, like, we did a 10-minute tag-out scene at a school function, and it's been coming out of the woodwork. It killed, obviously, because improv is new and exciting to everyone.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, people are coming and talking and asking us to do stuff and offering us money. And we actually got a gig for a coffee house, probably, hopefully monthly, get 50% of the head charge. So
nice.
That's good. That's a great way to start.
Yeah. Well,
where do you want to take it? Where do you see this going?
Oh, I really want to make it, you know, I mean, obviously I'd love to take it full time.
Of course.
As everyone would. But, right. I really see it at least being a part of my life for a good while to come. I want to build it. I want to get it good. I really want to go out to some place. I know IO opened a training facility in Raleigh, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to look into that and see if there's potential there. I want to make it not mediocre, because I know so many college improv groups, they just stick with the games, go what's popular. But I really want to take it as an art form. I want to take it to something that's
good
actually
for you,
good,
man.
And you know, something that's worth watching instead of just.
Well, I have to say, because that's kind of my angle on that too, is that I like, you know, it is an art form. It is, you know, can tell really great stories, and it can be really dramatic, and it can do all wonderful things that scripted material can do.
Mm-hmm.
But people get hung up on doing, you know.
Yeah, the whose line is it anyway stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the best thing that happened to improv, and it's the worst thing that
happened.
That's
exactly
to
right. Yeah.
Well, so tell us about your group. Are these some of these guys in your group, right?
Yeah.
How many people in your troop?
11 total.
Okay.
At this point, unfortunately, most are junior level.
Okay.
We have a freshman, we have like a sophomore, and a couple of seniors. So we're obviously going to have to work on getting the younger generation in on the troupe, which hopefully we'll have auditions coming up, because I'm going to have to be a fifth year, a super senior. And so, I mean, hey, I can do work and do more with the improv show. But, you know, just I want it to be a permanent thing with the school.
Mm-hmm.
It was a brand new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I want it to be a permanent thing with the school, and I want to take it, you know, a step further, maybe like have a continuing show.
Cool.
That we can actually keep going.
Good deal. And did you get a good grade?
I haven't graduated yet.
No.
So
okay.
It's,
so
it's
so you have not been graded yet.
No. But I think it's safe to assume.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. We're gonna do everything we can to make sure that you get
well,
a good,
I appreciate
good
that.
Grade. That's
yeah. So who are the faculty that we need to talk to?
Yeah,
Dr. Dale Savage, Dale Edwin Savage.
All right. We'll call him. And we'll tell him what an outstanding job.
What a fine, fine.
And as a matter of fact, if you want
student.
To, you can tell him about the podcast, and then he can hear us say it for ourselves.
Of course.
Exactly. What a wonderful student you are, and what an amazing improv actor.
Pleasure to work with.
Absolutely. Say the very least, absolutely.
Or at least workshop.
Yeah. Cool.
We have a dancing man here. Too bad this is not a totally visual, you know.
You're right, absolutely. Okay, so so people can contact you through your website, right?
Yes.
We will link to your website.
And as we will with yours? Yeah. Is that very how you
good.
Phrase it?
That's good enough. Anything that involves you linking to our website, you can say it however you want to.
Well, then, there you go.
Now, is the website, can you get booking? Can you? They get booking information and,
yes,
and all
we
that
do
kind
have
of stuff?
Contact that? Information, booking information. We thought ahead.
Sweet.
So,
and nice. what's your traveling radius? How far can you guys are you willing to go? To get
well, the pay depends, I suppose.
That's what I was asking.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, really, being still in formation, we're pretty much willing to go wherever we need to, as long as it's not the cornfields of Montana.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Well, we're pretty much a Southeast pod. I mean, even though we're worldwide, we've got listeners all over the place. You know. So, but. We focus our attention on the southeastern United States, so we can keep
we'll
you in that.
We'll,
yeah,
we'll
push
you in this
that,
region.
In the region. Well, anything be beyond the southeast, man, you're going to have to kind of grow on your
That's
own.
That's going
to
be
that.
Gravy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you'll just use us as a springboard, man, and then just
I plan on
take
it.
Off.
It may be a shortfall. It may be a great fall.
Yeah, you might be flying for a while, and then, yeah, anyway.
I will make an express, you know, a very bright burnout if
excellent,
I can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, good deal. Oh, so, Matthew, before we go.
We're doing
a
podcast based
on
the theater and the theater experience in the Southeast.
Oh, John's promoting us.
What better place to
be? Hang on, Matthew. John's promoting us for a second. All right,
so
we're rolling this. By the way, I got you on tape.
You got me doing my
pitch? I got
pitch?
You promoing, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was going to roll for Matthew here to introduce his cohort. But
oh,
since
I'm sorry. I'll
yeah.
stop. I'll stop
no,
promoting.
No, don't stop. It's
I'll
good.
I'll stop promoting tea.
No, it's good.
The dancing man has found a sandwich for $3.
I don't believe it.
I don't either. If he comes up with a sandwich, I'll believe he paid more for it. Okay, so Matthew, before we go,
yes,
tell us about you've got a guy standing here who's anxious to get on a mic. Tell us who he is.
I do. This is the I guess you could call him a co-founder. This is the friend of mine that helped really start this thing, get it off the ground. He's a fellow dreamer, and his name is Daniel Jordan. He is Cuban.
Hand him a mic. Let him talk for a while.
All right, here you go.
You can take it off the stand if you want. It doesn't matter.
Oh, then we have to do.
Then we can need music while they're transitioning and whatnot. There on that. Cool. Pull that mic up, man. You got to eat it.
I can eat it.
Okay.
I'm hungry.
So Daniel, right?
Yeah.
Tell us how you got in with this guy and how he coerced you into, or forcibly caused you to be in part of this group.
Well, he came, or we both transferred into North Greenville University. I guess the fall of 2005, mm-hmm. and then. We were both there. We met. We knew we were both theater majors. And just talking with each other, we both realized that, hey, we both enjoy improv. And it's a lot more fun than scripted material most of the time, all the time. And just with talking with each other, we decided, like, hey, what about if, you know, we had an improv team at our school? And originally it was just an idea. It was just a dream, you know, oh, okay, maybe that will not really happen, and we'll just go do some other things elsewhere. Then he found out that he was able to create an improv team as his senior project, and then just with talking with me, we came to SETC last year and went to a bunch of the workshops and tried to get new ideas to talk to everyone we could about starting off a team. And a lot of the same advice that we got was don't do it. it's more of a headache than it's worth. And we found that out to be somewhat true, but
right.
But now's the time to do it, man. I mean, yeah. you've got a little bit of faculty support going on, yeah. And all that. I mean, now's the time. I go ahead, sorry.
No. That was the overall synopsis. Just that first thing of, you know, don't do it. It's a lot of a headache, but you know, we still were able to talk to him, get some good ideas, and we started off doing just some short form games. Mm-hmm. We found an improv encyclopedia of games online, and we just started doing a bunch of the games that we thought were good. We had a couple, shows we could say. They were just short form shows, and we just from those three shows, we ended up becoming this very popular form of entertainment on the campus. You know, we did a poetry night. We did our three shows, and people knew our name. They knew us by our faces, and they were able to be like, hey, you know, you did the improv stuff. That's great. So that was exciting for us just to see that we had some type of hype and some type of a fan base at our school. And then both Matt and I, we started finding out about the Improv Olympic and Second City and all those things. And we found out that there are long-form games of improv, which both of us agree that it's a lot more, I guess, I want to say difficult because, I mean, it is a lot more difficult to create a half-hour to an hour-long story out of this out of these things, which... Once we found out that we were actually writing stories just off the cuff, we fell in love with this idea, and we started researching the Herald, which is probably the long form that we try to do the most. We've tried to do some other things unsuccessfully thus far, but you know that's still work in progress, so to speak.
There you go.
Good way to work the title back in. That's nicely done.
I have to try.
Very good. With promotion like that, man.
Wow, you guys are going to be set.
Telling you.
Yeah, so we read some different books. We had both read Impro for Keith Johnstone. We found Truth in Comedy. We found a ton of other books. I'm not sure if he mentioned any of them.
Yeah, he mentioned several.
Yeah, he mentioned several of them. I don't remember the titles. I just remember
we don't either, but that's
yeah. Yeah, so we found out. We found the rules of Herald, and I remember the first time we tried doing it, it was maybe 10 minutes long. But that was still significantly longer than a lot of our 2 to 3 minute short form games.
Right.
Which we took as that was the greatest thing ever. We managed to do a 10 minute Herald and it kind of made sense. So we started working on the Herald, trying to get it longer and building story and pushing forward characters and doing all of those things. And we found out about the game to put within Herald, which is tag outs, you know, flashbacks, all that stuff. And we started playing those separately. We started just doing tag outs. Just, you know, two people start a scene, and then if you feel the need to do a tag out, go in there, start tagging people out and progress the story, do all those things. It wasn't until this semester we started practicing some more with the Herald and the tag outs separately. And then I think we had three shows at the beginning of this year, like towards the end of January. And basically, the week before we had our shows, we were like, okay, now let's try to combine the tag outs with the Heralds. And at first, we were very tentative, and we were all really scared about it because, you know, this two games forming into one kind of thing. And it actually worked out incredible. It was so fun because at that moment, it was like everyone's brain clicked. That it was like, okay, now that we know the basis for both of these different things, we're able to combine them to form the story.
Right.
And
that's excellent.
The three Heralds that we did those three nights, it was so much fun. We were able to build story. We had people coming up afterwards just saying, like, they were just marveling at, yeah, hey. they were thoroughly enjoying the fact that we were able to just come up with a brand new story based on their suggestions, and it was a lot of fun.
That's excellent. And you guys are students. That's the best part of this whole thing is that you guys got this rolling thing as your students, man. Yeah. That's outstanding.
Well, just to say, I guess I can speak for you.
Yeah, speak to me, and that might work out better.
But we wish you much continued success
in
this endeavor, and we applaud your efforts. And
yeah, I don't. You can't speak for me. I don't wish you any success
at
all.
No, that's fine.
He's an so
I wish it upon myself. Thank you very much.
He'll do the wishing for you.
There you go. I'm all seriousness aside, I agree with John. I wish you guys great success, and I hope this continues to grow for you.
And let us know. Keep in touch. Let us know how it progresses.
Send us an email
and all that stuff.
Definitely. We totally will.
Absolutely. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks.
Plot, character, theme, diction or language, music and spectacle. Aristotle's six elements of tragedy. If you'd done your reading, you could see how Aristotle's poetics are to Eugenia Barber's paper canoe as Aeschylus's Oresteia is to Harold Pinter's A Kind of Alaska.
And now it's time for another excerpt from Dumb Show University.
Tim, why are you here?
Well,
I mean, not at SETC. I know where you're at SETC. Why are you sitting here on a microphone or a microphone with us?
Oh, gosh.
I'm just kidding. We've interviewed you once already for your stuff at Bluegrass.
Yes, sir.
So so tell us what's going on. Give us an update on that stuff.
Well, let's see. Since I've last talked to you, we have instituted our Film Certificate Program, which went into effect 1st of January. We had a full slate, a full class, rather, should we say. We were offering 20 slots in that class, and we have 22 in there, and about 60 on the waiting list. No kidding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's insane. People have been beating our doors down for this. The thing that happened that we didn't anticipate, we knew that we would get a lot of folks from outside of the college in the community who'd want to be a part. But three-quarters of the class filled up during pre-registration for our current students.
Wow.
And we had no idea that we would get that. And so, yeah, it's been very successful. We've had a lot of folks come in. Brad Riddell, who's a screenwriter, a Hollywood screenwriter who has some connections with the bluegrass. Stu Pollard, who's a producer in Hollywood, also has some bluegrass connections. Came down, and we have. Oh, I don't even know if I should say it.
We
have a very special guest who's going to sit in a couple of weeks for one particular class.
Can you divulge who that person would be?
I can tell you this, and this is all I will tell you. She has been seen at University of Kentucky basketball games, and I will give you that.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that. She has a special seat all her own. And any time I go to a UK basketball game, I always try to sit as close to that seat as I can. But
okay.
But yeah. So that's me not telling you officially, but
because you don't want to kiss the girls and tell.
That, right. Of course. Well, maybe find a different reference. I think with that genre. Maybe that one.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't want rumors to spread here.
That's
on
right. Right.
Podcast.
No. But yeah. So we're real excited there. Also, our theater courses. I'm offering a full slate of theater courses this semester. Had over 70 students sign up for theater classes this semester.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, man. It really was. We're very cool. And I actually still have about 50 of those.
Nice.
So yeah, we've cast our first show. We're doing a production of Laddie Sarton's Blessed Assurance. I had close to 30 people show up for auditions, and just some incredibly talented kids. And I was very, very pleased with that. One of the cool things we have a lot of really great high school programs in the Central Kentucky area. Folks that, you know, you have folks with MFAs and whatnot teaching in these high school programs, people that are theater trained, because we've made a big push to try to get people who are actually trained in theater to teach it in high school.
What a concept.
Yeah, wow. I know. Go
novel
figure.
Novel idea.
I know.
Strangely enough, it is a novel idea in most places, but so we have some really, really strong high school programs. Dunbar High, for instance, which is in Lexington, those guys did a show last year with an $80,000 budget. So,
gee,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, there you go. But they have really,
dream,
I know, no kidding, some really strong actors. And we're finding that we're getting a lot of these students coming through the doors of bluegrass for one reason or another. And we're very excited. So we've got a great cast. Our show is going to run April 4th and 5th in the Downtown Arts Center, which is a Wednesday and Thursday. We had to change our dates a little bit due to some scheduling snafus, but such is life. And we're excited about that. Rick, who you'll talk to here in a minute, has been real instrumental in helping us get that together. And we're having the playwright, Laddie Sarton, is coming in opening night to participate in a talk back with us. So we're real jazzed about that.
That's excellent.
Lots of stuff going on. And since I talked to you guys, I also have tentative plans for a partnership with another theater in the community, the Studio Players, a small theater in Lexington, where we're partnering to produce a summertime musical. And we're looking at doing a production of Working in conjunction with those guys, which will probably run sometime later in the summer and may even overlap into Labor Day. Working, Labor Day. Huh?
Hey, what a concept.
Yeah.
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 That's not a whole lot of people really link that together.
Yeah, you know,
you're a visionary, Tim.
I have an MFA. What can you say? But at any rate, so yeah, lots of good stuff going on, man. We're real excited. Real excited.
Good deal. Well, thanks for stopping by and checking with us here at the Southeastern Theater Conference here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yee-haw.
Thanks again for checking in.
Thanks, man.
All right. Darren?
Yes.
Tell us where you're from.
Union University in Jackson, Tennessee.
Excellent. Thank you. And you win the prize.
Oh.
Now,
hey.
So what's going on at Union?
We just opened, my colleague just opened The Tempest.
Opening
right now. And we have a guest artist coming in from England who's kind of co-directed that. Nigel Goodwin from, I think it's RADA, I think he's working with.
Wow, cool.
Nice.
It's very cool. So.
Sweet. And then that open, give us dates.
That opens actually tonight. It opens tonight, runs through next Tuesday, in Jackson, Tennessee at Union there. So,
excellent.
Yeah, it's very good.
Excellent.
They're
stuff.
Doing a really good job of it.
So what else have you got going on other than the major productions and stuff like that? What
Well, I do. I'm actually directing at the Jackson Theater Guild in Jackson, too. So while that's going on, I'm actually directing Neil Simon's Fools and was kind of roped into it. I'm enjoying it, but I find out that, you know, doing my dramaturgical research, that he wrote it because the rumor is that he wrote it because it was a settlement with his first or second wife he was divorcing. And part of the thing was she was supposed to get proceeds from his next play, so he tried to write the worst play ever.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I always tell people you can't keep a good writer down because it's actually a hilarious play. It's just
You know, it's really funny. Somebody needs to take that story and make a play out of it. That's exactly what needs to be.
So, yeah, it's been great. And then, you know, SETC, I love coming up here and see all you guys and Tim and all these folks.
Yeah. Excellent. And we had a nice dinner last night at Hooters, too, I might add.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, right there in downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, thanks for the fried pickles.
So Darren hooked us up with the fried pickles. That's
very
great
cool.
stuff.
Yeah. I'm sure the people at Union University will be very happy that I mealed at
but you've
Hooters.
You've got the receipt, man. You're going to have to turn the receipt for expenses anyway. You can't really hide the Hooters thing.
And I'll actually type out a report of
why we setting up this interview.
Yeah, that's
right. Exactly what it was.
It was all business.
Well, feel free to use us as an excuse to go to Hooters anytime.
Yeah, really. they twist the arm there.
Yeah, right.
But I mean,
okay.
I think, yeah, if we have to, we will.
Right.
So you've got a couple of shows going on. What else? What are your specialties?
My MFA is in performance. Specialties probably all my life has been stage movement, a lot of movement work. I do mask work. I've been a big fan of Dario Fo. A lot of the Commedia work I do. I've recently, probably in the last 5 years, got into some more advanced kind of combat work. But improvisation, which was wonderful, I got to see you guys. Wonderful, Harold. I teach that. So it was good to see someone else do it, I was very excited to see that. So I get to tell my students who missed out on the Harold work. So,
right. Yeah. So. Shame on them for missing.
It was,
right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Good stuff, man.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
We appreciate
great.
It. This was a surprise to me, John. This one was.
Okay.
I had no idea one of my former Texas students was going to be here at SETC.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, that's sweet.
Brenna, thank you.
It was wonderful to see you.
Well, it was great to see you, too. Where are you again? Tell us where you are.
I'm at Randolph-Macon Women's College in Virginia.
And you're here doing doing the professional auditions.
I am.
Have you gone yet? You have.
I
you because you're
yes.
a low number.
I do.
Because you're not one of the 500s that I'm seeing walking around.
No. I was lucky enough to get yesterday's audition.
Good. So tell us how you did.
I did all right. I got about 4 callbacks.
Including?
I got called back by Actors Theater of Louisville.
Nice.
And
for the internship program. How's that?
Great.
Yes, and a Flat Rock in North Carolina.
Outstanding.
Yes, and Missoula Children's Theater.
So here's the history of this, John. The history of this. I was actually working technical side for a production of Damn Yankees that she was in.
Uh-huh.
But then the next year, cast her sister, her younger sister, as Oliver in a production of Oliver at the high school in Texas. So it's a family affair.
It is. It's amazing how theater is such a small world.
I'm telling you. Where is she now? Where is she going now?
She's at the University of Oklahoma.
See?
Sooner or later.
Great. Well, you know what? It was great. It was good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Thanks.
First, there was one. And then there was this other guy. We wanted to add another guy. I mean, in addition to the first two guys, but the studio is too small for that. Instead, that third guy, let's just say he wound up unemployed and having to read ad copy in an announcer's voice, but I guess it makes sense. I mean, it is T for two, right? It's two's company, right? Unless your landlord is Don Knotts. You lousy cheap bastards! Couldn't have thought outside the box just this one freaking time, huh? Couldn't have thrown somebody a bone, could you? Mommy. I should have become a veterinarian. I'm sorry.
All right. Let's just focus on the next segment. Go to the two shot.
All right. So, Dr. Ken Stilson.
Yes. Hello.
Here at SETC and not in handcuffs, we see.
No. Not in handcuffs.
Okay, so give us a little bit of the background of this story. I read the article in Southern Theater, and actually John pointed it out to me.
I was just amazed by your saga.
I mean, it just continued to get more and more epic, you know.
Well,
tell us give us the Reader's Digest of the story. And
oh God, the Reader's Digest is
which is actually a dissertation in of itself. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean the Reader's Digest version of the story is that I simply directed a production of Romeo and Juliet that was based. I mean the concept was classically based. We set it in the 16th century, and it was, you know, I mean, but my whole idea about the story is that Romeo and Juliet is there. It's basically two different plays.
Uh-huh.
The first half of Romeo and Juliet sets up the second half. The first half is carnal. It's a lot more base. It's actually even a comedy in many ways. And so as I was directing the play, and the first half of the play is really dominated by those by the
Romeo's
boys.
Yeah.
And but the idea is that you know what I think that Shakespeare is doing is setting up the second half to show the difference, the contrast between the lust and you know and the just simply the raging hormones of the first half to contrast it with the second half, which is about true love.
Right.
And that's really the whole point. So anyway, but
that was your concept.
That was the base concept.
Right. Okay.
What happened was we had a newspaper reviewer who came to see it. And he's a very young guy, and he's not extraordinarily good at reviewing the arts. And well, he really doesn't have a background in that,
right?
And
he just happened to be able to write.
And so anyway, he was assigned to the arts and leisure section, and so he covered the story. Well, as a young reporter, and again, not very professional, what he did was he came to the final dress rehearsal, and he got there a little bit late, and he left at intermission. Well, the whole first half of the play is the lust and the carnal, you know, elements, the about the boys, and certainly about Juliet too. But even in the beginning of the play, Juliet is she's such a not just a girl, but you know, she's in love with love, just like Romeo is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, the next day when the review came out, he made proclamations that he saw the entire play, but all he focused on, of course, was the part that he saw.
Mm.
So he wrote that particular review, and then he wrote three subsequent articles on this play, all of them dealing with what one of his titles was called the Verona Boys Club, and then he had another one said Romeo and Juliet. This production of Romeo and Juliet spares good manners, or something like that. And then the other one dealt with race, because my Romeo, and this was also part of the concept, and it's not that far out of a concept because it deals with forbidden love. Mm-hmm. So my Romeo and Montague and Balthazar, they were all black actors.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote another article that dealt with the race issue. So of course high schools, you know, got wind of this. We had about 17 high schools coming to see the production.
Mm-hmm.
And parents, bigoted parents and whatnot. I mean, they never really played the race card.
Right.
Right.
They didn't say that openly. But they did, you know, what they used as their excuse to talk about the antics of the boys, and they didn't want their children to come and see such disgusting filth as Romeo and Juliet. And so so 9 out of the 17 high schools who were planning to come and see it, to bring groups to see it, through pressure from parents, pulled their tickets, and they didn't come. Then a young girl from this small town in southern Missouri named Poplar Bluff, is the name of the town. Her mother, who did not even see the show, pressed charges against me and the university. There's my Romeo right there. He just walked by. Anyway, he pressed Right there he goes again.
See, he walked one way and walked.
There you go.
We're just talking about that. Go ahead.
Anyway, they pressed charges against me and the university for criminal sexual misconduct. And the woman who pressed charges actually was through her daughter, but didn't even see the play. She just heard about it. Her daughter was so distraught over seeing this play, and she sat there for 3 hours watching it.
Right, of course.
But she was so distraught that
apparently her legs weren't working. And
well,
you know,
yes. And
go
so
ahead, I'm interrupting. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So anyway, so next thing I know is just even a couple of days later, the show wasn't even closed yet. You know, I get a phone call from the police department that they want me to come down there and to make a statement. Well, I get there, and they read me my Miranda rights. I'm in an interrogation room, and, you know, the whole bit.
So you were formally charged?
No, I was not formally charged.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that's...
But they did read me my Miranda rights. I had to sit in an interrogation room for 2 hours making a statement, and they interrogated me, and so that was the whole ordeal. Then it got picked up by the local newspaper. I mean, by the local television station. It got picked up by Associated Press. It got picked up by MSNBC News. It was on Scarborough Country. They called it Madness in Missouri, and they talked about it at the same time they were talking about the religious debate that was going on with the Da Vinci Code. And this was all about the same time, too, as all this discussion about evolution was going on in Kansas. So it was all
going
on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so from my perspective, really what happened was, and we did have those antics in there, and I say that in the article. I talk about that quite a bit. I mean, there's no doubt. I don't apologize for that. I wouldn't do one thing differently. Matter of fact, I thought I had a relatively tame production.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I loved your defense of that in pulling it directly from the Shakespearean text and using his words and saying these are the words he used. That was what was inspiring to me about your article in the magazine.
Well, absolutely. It wasn't that anything was taken out of. You know, I mean, it was taken right from the text and interpretation of the text. I mean, it is what it is. And you know, the real issue, from my perspective, is that a lot of the, you know, as a high school teacher, as somebody who calls yourself a teacher, I guess I should say, and as somebody who as a high school administrator, for years and years and years, the high schools, and everybody knows this, the high schools censor, you know, a lot of their literature.
Mm-hmm.
And with Romeo and Juliet, they, because it's public domain, they routinely censor this literature. And so, like I said, we gave them what I thought was a true and honest interpretation of the script.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was based in the text. It was crude in places. There's no question about that. And that was intentional. Like I said, I would take nothing back. But they made the assumption that that what we were going to do was give them a censored or sanitized version,
no.
which is what they read mm-hmm. in the high schools.
Right.
And that's just not the case. And so to me, this all really comes back to the high schools themselves, that they made an assumption that we were going to be doing the version of the script
version,
that they read.
Right.
Which is totally incorrect. So, so I made no apologies. They made no apologies to us either, and so it was in the end, it was all much ado about nothing. But it raised a whole lot of media coverage over the issue of censorship and. You know, and everything. So I guess there's no such thing as bad publicity, but it raised, like I said, it was much ado about nothing from the very beginning. But the ordeal, it wasn't funny at the time.
No, of course not.
But now it's somewhat laughable as long as you weren't the one going through.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, you keep. Let me just interrupt. Yeah. You said in your article that your administration and everything at your university was very supportive.
Well, they had seen it. Many of the administrators saw it on opening night. And I had a number of deans, the vice president and the provost, and they had all seen it. And they had all congratulated me. They had sent notes of how, you know, how proud they were of the department and all this. And it was very, you know, it was very, you know, I mean, it was all very complimentary and everything. And so... Then, and even after the first article, the review had come out, like I said, it took a little while for this snowball to build. But, you know, but so, you know, for anyway, I was very, very happy that the university, and I must say, too, the majority, the vast, vast majority of the public, they certainly were supportive of this. I mean, it was well attended. Audiences really seemed to enjoy the show. Matter of fact, it didn't hurt our attendance at all. As a matter of fact, good. It probably helped our attendance.
Probably did, yeah.
So, like I said, the vast majority of the audience loved it. Although I had the occasional, you know, person or two walk out, and one lady walk out with a group of seven people with her saying that this was nothing but pornography, but you know, but the vast majority really, really loved it, and I like I said, for every one person who didn't like it, I probably had 19 who loved it, you know, and so it was a very successful production.
Talk about the interrogation. I'm going to call it the interrogation scene. Tell me about what that was like. I mean, because this had to have blindsided you. This had to have come completely out of nowhere. I mean,
absolutely. I got a phone call to come down to the police station, and like I said, I go into the interrogation room, is what it says on the outside, and it's a cinder block room, no windows, and it was painted, I remember, mustard yellow. It was really horrible. Uh-huh. And I didn't even put this in the article because I thought, oh my God, this will sound like I'm making this up. But the detective who was interrogating me he only had one arm, even. And like I said, I decided to leave. I was like the one-armed detective who was interrogating me.
He didn't have
just one arm. He had one arm, but he had one of those artificial arms with the little hook.
The claw. Oh,
man.
And so anyway, he had told me that he had been investigating this for X number of hours and hours, and he'd been all over the region, you know, interviewing people and all of this. And so... it was very surreal. Because
this is after the show closed. This is after.
No. We had not closed. It run. This okay. was right in the middle of the run.
Oh, so how long is your run? I'm sorry. Did this...
Just a couple of weeks. Okay. But it was somewhere in the middle of the run, and so he had been investigating, calling, visiting, and all this kind of stuff, so I had to even submit a copy. I mean, we had it videotaped. So I submitted all of that. I brought in a copy of the script with me to show the detective, you know. but it was just, it was surreal because, like I said, the surreal part was when he really did read me my Miranda rights, and I had to actually sign my Miranda rights.
Oh, that you had, yeah.
I understood them, and I had read them and all this kind of stuff. So it was just really surreal, and I was in there for 2 hours, and I really was never very nervous about, you know, like saying, oh, I'm going to be, you know, put in jail or anything like this, because I knew that I was right, and I knew that, you know, this was all about artistic freedom and freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I was absolutely in the right, and I remember talking to the detective saying, you know, that if the district attorney does take this case, that this town, this community, will be a laughingstock. That I said, it will be picked up by the national press, and that we will be a laughingstock. And I said, you also know that I'm calling my publisher as soon as I walk out of this room, and which I did. As a matter of fact, I was walking back to my office because the station was fairly close to my office. But I was walking back, and I had Deanna Thompson's number on my cell phone, and so I called Deanna and just said, you know, I have a really good story I need to tell you. And as I was giving my statement, you have to hand write your statement. I mean, I had to sit there. That's the reason I was in there for so long. I was handwriting that out.
Wow.
And so the whole time I'm in there, I was thinking, I was actually writing my statement thinking, I'm going to publish this. I'm going to write this. You know, and so that's what I was doing.
Wow.
You know, so it was very odd. Like I said, I was I wasn't nervous. I was pretty clear-headed because I wasn't scared. I knew that nothing really was going to happen.
So what was the cop's demeanor in this?
He was very businesslike. He wasn't rude at all.
But not polite either.
But he didn't see the absurdity of this at all?
Yes, he did, but he tried to maintain his professional demeanor by not taking sides with me.
Well, that's laudable, I guess.
It wasn't him. I really cannot say that the police officer himself. Matter of fact, he even said to me a couple of times. He goes, "I'm just doing my job." You know, he goes, whenever somebody presses charges, we have to take it seriously, and this has happened, and you know, therefore, we, you know,
wow.
Yeah.
I have to do what I have to do.
Go ahead.
No. Anyway, so that's essentially, you know.
What effect, if any, did it have on your actors in the show? Did they know about it at all?
Oh, God, yeah, they were all aware.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Although a lot of them weren't aware that I had been taken to the police station, but they were all aware because it was all in the press. I mean, there was editorials, commentaries, all sorts of things, you know, that were submitted to the papers. And I mean, so it was. It was all over the place as far as the local press and regional press and everything. So they were aware of the controversy, and they were certainly aware that a lot of high schools had pulled their tickets. Mm-hmm. So they were aware of all of that. They weren't aware necessarily of the police station and that kind of stuff. Did it affect them? No, not really. Matter of fact, or at least put it this way, nothing that I could see. They laughed about it. Every night I would go back to the call board, and they would have the newest commentaries posted back there. And so, they're 18 to 23 year old and indestructible, and they laughed about it. But like I said, in the end, it probably made our audiences larger rather than smaller because again, everybody was like, well.
What's this about?
Yeah. I want to go see what they're doing there, you know. And so, like I said, it didn't hurt us, and it certainly didn't change us at all. It just made us more. I shouldn't even say that it made us even more cautious. I guess the only thing that really it's going to change in it is, first off, we're not inviting high schools groups to our shows anymore. As groups.
Okay. Let me interrupt. That's a blanket statement that your department has said. We will no longer extend invitations as groups to any high school group for any production, or is this?
No, I mean, I probably shouldn't be that strong. You know, if we're doing something that is, but see, the thing is I thought that this would have been perfectly appropriate for high schools.
Yeah,
right. I had no problem. So that's the thing is, it's made us very skittish about inviting high school groups. So put it this way, we have not done that since then.
Okay.
Whether we will or not in the future, I don't know, but we would have to make sure that it is, you know, it is nothing more than PG or or whatever.
And that's a shame.
It would have to be, because there's a lot of great literature that has got. We're doing Big River next fall, and I'm like, oh my God. Well, there's slavery and racism and that kind of stuff. Although it's really a love story and very pro. It's a wonderful love story between a man and a boy, and it's nothing but a phenomenal piece of work.
Right.
I would be afraid to invite a high school to come and see it simply because of, you know, how would they, you know, who knows what they find offensive or not.
Right. And then you're.
Or
you're,
who's going to raise, I'm sorry. Or,
but
who's
then you're
raise
stuck.
The, go ahead.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I know you're excited here, but I mean, there is an issue. Exactly. You're not going to know. Who's going to be offended by what material?
Absolutely. Right. You almost can't pick
a piece. You can't play that game.
You cannot pick almost every play that you can even possibly think of has got sexuality in it. It's got violence in it. It's got...
Humanity, is that what you're talking about?
It's got humanity. I mean, plays are about powerful subject matter.
Right.
And so, you know... Somebody is going to be offended at anything that you do, unless we do nothing but morality plays or children's plays. Maybe,
right.
I guess is the idea. So again, I really don't know. It's made us more cautious. We also are putting up more signage in our lobbies before somebody enters. We just did Streetcar Named Desire. We just closed last weekend, And certainly in the lobby on both sides as they enter into our theater, it said, you know, smoking and sexual content and violence in there. So, yeah. I mean, you know, so we're a little bit more cautious about making sure that we advertise that to people.
Yeah.
But beyond that, though, no, it hasn't changed anything that we, as far as our the way we choose our seasons or what we do or anything like that. Like I said, much ado about nothing is the best way I would describe it, you know, and it just reinforced my opinions about, you know, the right wing, you know, conservative faction of the country.
Well, I think your next production should be Corpus Christi.
I think we're going to do an entire naked season is what I want to do.
Calcutta.
We want to do we want to do Equus and then Old Calcutta and then we'll do an entire nude season. You know, that was my recommendation.
That would be a great way to go. Thanks for stopping by, taking some time to chat with us about this. The story was it got my blood boiling. You know.
Well, you know what? I think that the reason why it has resonated with a lot of people is the fact that everybody that I have talked to about it all have their own little stories that are similar, and they were all, no matter where it is. I heard some stories in Virginia. I heard about some people in Kansas. I heard about, just friends from mine from all over the country who would, you know, write, or people I didn't even know, and they would say, oh, and they would tell me their story of, you know, something similar to this.
Right.
There's even, and this is a funny story, it actually is down in Florida, I don't know if you heard about it, but the Vagina Monologues was being...
Yes, outside of Jacksonville.
Yes, outside of Jacksonville. Well, you think of Jacksonville should be a fairly enlightened city. I mean, you know, it's a fairly good-sized city. It's very cosmopolitan and all of this. So you think, okay, well, this is southeast Missouri, what I'm talking about. No, it's not just there. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. But they were doing a production of the Vaginal Monologues in just outside Jacksonville, Florida, and the community got so outraged over it that they... wouldn't allow them to use the word vagina for their advertising. So they changed all of their posters from the Vagina Monologues to the Hoo-Ha Monologues.
That's great.
The Hoo-Ha Monologues. So and if you really get down to it, that's actually a little bit more graphic than the Vagina Monologues.
Yeah, at least one of them's a medical term. I mean, for crying out loud, you know?
Yeah, so anyway, not just... it's not just where I happen to live right now. It's all over. And, you know, and so anyway, I'm sorry it happened, but it will change nothing as far as the way that we are.
Well, that's the way it should be. You know, I mean, I love your comment about how, you know, they're offended and upset about going to see the show, but then they go home and watch, you know, any TV show that's on any of the major three networks, and they get the exact same thing.
They watch this. Anybody who goes home and watches daytime television, go home and watch primetime television. I was watching, not CSI, but one of those shows last night, Crossing Jordan, which you think is a very tame show. But there they are. They show somebody being murdered, their brains being blown out, and then they go to the morgue where they've got this person ripped open and you see their guts and blood, everything hanging out. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but sexuality is not, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and even some of the just the discussions of stuff that's on the sitcoms like Will and Grace and stuff like that is no worse than, you know, than that. It's just it's totally hypocritical and two-faced but what more do we expect, right?
Yep.
Listen, we really appreciate you taking the time to step over here and chat with us.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
I think that was fantastic, man. Don't you? The closing. That was great.
Yeah.
All of that stuff was just great.
Wow. I don't know where we're going to go from here.
I don't either. I'm just kind of speechless.
I know. It means we're going to have to do more work next week.
Yeah. God, that's not good. Well, we can promo the fact that we do have an interview coming up with a couple of actors from my hometown.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're going to drive up actually and do it in person.
Wow.
They're doing a production of a show.
Talk about commitment.
I know. Oh, hey. New products in the Cafe Press store.
Oh, yeah? What do we got?
Yeah, we got some new sheets. New shirts? New sheets.
We got new sheets.
Sleep with them. Sleep. It's got our faces on it. So that while you're wallowing around on the bed, you're actually just, you know, you're laying down.
I never knew we had old sheets. So getting new ones is pretty cool.
It's bed sheets. They're king and queen sized with our headshots on them. That's what they are. Can we just go away from this and maybe come back and think about something new for next week? And can we do that?
Can we?
Got it in me. All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.